This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure, number 157C, page 668. And we are in the appendix of the book. We've been studying Saturn from the Secret Doctrine and also from Cosmic Fire now. Venus, the Earth, and Saturn form at the present time a triangle of great interest. Is this the Kundalini triangle? There is a Kundalini triangle operative in our solar system at this time. What's interesting here is that Venus oftentimes represents Camelmanus. Saturn is mental and the Earth is physical. So we have a what we have here is a possible personality triangle representing representing the mind, astral body, and dense physical body of a greater being. But let's look at the chakras. Saturn, the throat center of our planetary logos, Venus, the solar plexus temporarily of our solar logos, Earth, the base of the spine. So we have a triangle here of throat center, solar plexus, and base of spine center. In order, Earth, or Saturn, the throat center, Venus, solar plexus, and Earth, base of spine. There, the Kundalini is operative, let's see, Venus, Earth, Saturn, and I'm going to look up the word Kundalini, and let's just see whether that's part of it. Venus, Earth, Saturn, Kundalini. Let's see. Right. Earth, Mercury, and Mars form a triangle of rare importance, and we've talked about that particular sequence in the chains. So it may be here said that at the present point in evolution of logoic centers, Venus, Earth, and Saturn form one triangle of great interest. It is a triangle at this time undergoing vivification through the action of Kundalini. It is consequently increasing the vibratory capacity of the centers, which are becoming slowly fourth dimensional. It is not yet permissible to point out others of the great triangles. I think for the science of triangles, we do not only go to the Esoteric Astrology book. We have 181 here and 182 of Cosmic Fire. And we see that these extracts have been sort of pulled out in a outline form. So TCF 181, 182, and they've been presented in a factual, prosaic, straightforward manner, and the context is missing. And with that missing context comes the loss of some of the sense of what's happening. So we, the Earth, the base of spine, if we are playing that function right now, or whatever function we may be playing, you know, there is a kind of a mental unit function, which I wouldn't be surprised to see the Earth playing. And Venus, the solar plexus, in a strongly astrobuddhic solar system, and Saturn, the throat center, all undergoing vivification at this time. Well, we know that our solar logos is preparing for the third cosmic initiation. I mean, whenever that may be. It's also passing through a kind of fourth initiation, I suspect, in our fourth scheme. The solar plexus, the throat, the base of spine. The intelligence is increasing. The what will Venus be giving off? The fifth ray, will luminosity be increasing? It's interesting that Venus giving off the fifth ray could be connected with the solar plexus center, which is the fifth chakra from above. The number 5 is associated with the solar plexus, giving it a connection with the number 1. 2 5s are 10, and 1 is the first ray. 6 and 1 are strongly related. 5 half of 10, but it's the chakra of the sixth ray. And then the stimulation of our planet, which I think we are really experiencing with our so-called global warming and the many shifts we're passing through, it'd be interesting to see whether, because they are stimulated by Kundalini, whether Venus and Saturn are undergoing strong changes from their usual condition. Well, we know that eventually Uranus, or rather Earth, will be involved in solar systemic Kundalini. This is the question, you know, does the Kundalini of our solar logos come from the Earth, or is the Earth simply an aspect, a recipient of that Kundalini power? Is the being of the solar logos independent of the being of the planets? Does the solar logos have his own base of the spine, which in a way is the sun itself? Now, going right back to that interesting place on page 301. We see that the physical sun is considered the base of the spine center, and that Saturn and Neptune are also considered in relation to the base of the spine, and that ongoing mystery of Uranus in relation to the heart, and Mercury in relation to the heart. That's if we read the columns vertically. Reading them horizontally, we get a different, well, a slightly different picture, but still the same. Mercury and Uranus both have to do with the heart of the sun. How interesting. And the base of the spine center, the physical sun, seems to hold that. But notice that over here, in relation to the head, we're not talking about, it doesn't call it the physical sun. And Sirius has a definite head center connection. And the central spiritual sun, well, it doesn't seem to be. See, the awakening of the seventh center by the work, by the soul working through the first or highest head center, and producing as a consequence the surging up of the Kundalini fire. When this takes place, the three major centers in the body are, this is interesting, the same centers that rule the first ray political group. This is a very, I guess we're talking about man to a degree. The central spiritual sun, the monad, Sirius, the soul, the sun, the vehicle. Well, there's a lot to be said about this particular chart, and maybe when I went through it a long time ago, I hope I said some things which were of use. Okay, so this is what I was looking for. For some time, the solar logos has turned his attention to the Earth and to Saturn whilst Uranus is being stimulated. Now, this turning of attention, so I'm going to get a red bracket here. This turning of attention is a stimulation, no question about it. Is it a kundalinic stimulation. If we go to 357 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, let's see if we can, well, 357, we'll see if Kundalini is involved. And we don't want that. We want, what we're going to do is just make this whole thing disappear for a moment and come back. Sometimes there seems to be no way except to make the program disappear for a moment. 357. And let's see. Right. The heavenly man is consequently the embodiment of a specific type of electrical force. Each scheme, as a human center, will vibrate to some one key, have its own coloring, resemble, when seen from the higher planes, a vast lotus, possess, according to its vibratory capacity, a definite number of petals, etc., etc. Thus, at one period, one center or heavenly man may be the subject of logoic attention and of specialized stimulation, and at another period, a totally different scheme may be subject to vitalization. From the time the logos has turned, for some time the logos has turned his attention to the Earth scheme and to Saturn and to Uranus, whilst Uranus is receiving stimulation, much is therefore accentuated and increased voluntarily, evolutionarily. Increased evolutionary development is the consequence of this divine attention. Well, think of the Aquarian Age, ruled in a way by both Saturn and Uranus. So think of the Aquarian Age, ruled by Uranus and Saturn, both being stimulated along with the Earth. We have here triadal stimulation, and certainly mental stimulation. We have really the possibility of overcoming illusion, time and timelessness. Uranus, timelessness, Saturn, time, all on the planes of the Earth. We have a very strong seventh ray. These two planets also promote the seventh ray during a seventh ray age. So when you turn attention to these planets, I suppose turning attention to the Earth, Earth scheme, is like stimulating the Kundalini. Turning attention to Saturn is like stimulating the throat, and to Uranus we have the head center, the greater head center, probably. All this is movement, I would say, towards cosmic mental polarization. I have not yet solved whether our solar logos is cosmically mentally polarized. It looks like he's working on that, and that he still has a cosmic astral polarization, meaning he hasn't reached the midway point between his second and third cosmic initiation. So let's take a look at that quickly, if we can. Cosmic mental polarization. As the Logos is polarized in his cosmic astral sheath and has not yet attained cosmic mental polarization, his force of desire nature is the main incentive for subjective life and lives that underlie the form. Well, there it is, exactly. TCF 512. Okay. TCF 512. So he has not reached the midway point where cosmic mental polarization is achieved, if the analogy holds good from the process in human nature. So what's happening in our solar system? The law, the creation of form. Notice Neptune is not being stimulated. Two mental planets are being stimulated, and the Earth, with its second and third ray, perhaps not so much its first ray at this time. Notice that two mental planets are being stimulated. Each of these planets has a strong ray 3. And DK tells us about the third ray of Saturn, of Uranus, in one of his passing references. Saturn is the greatest of the third ray planets, and the Earth has the third ray personality. All of this is a movement towards mentality and towards a certain type of etheric stimulation. It's a movement towards, we might say, the regulation of the astral vehicle by the solar logos. Interesting. I guess he has his own struggles, but he is an initiate of the second degree cosmically, in his own line of initiation. That's not the same thing as, let's say, Venus being a cosmic initiate of the second degree, which is most probable. As I tried to explain, man, the planet, the sun, or man, the planetary logos, the solar logos, they all have their own lines of initiation. The numbers may be the same, but the effects having a very different scope. Occultism must win the day before the present era reaches Saturn's triple septenary of the Western cycle of Europe. How is that calculated? But anyway, she clarifies it before the end of the 21st century AD. Well, we've got the bar set for us. The goal is set. Occultism must win the day. Be recognized. Be respected, be accepted by a sufficient number, and we are working towards that. If man chooses the path of rationality instead of the path of belief, remember Aquarius is a very mental age, ray 5, ray 7 has a strong mentality. And if the sixth ray is not allowed to dominate, but should fade out accordingly, as it will without too much destruction of the human race, then the sufficient type of mentality to accept occultism will emerge. In a way, well, we've got 87 years from now, the end of the 21st century, 87 years. So in all of the educational so-called propaganda work which we do, we are seeding these ideas with the best logic and explanatory power we have into the mind of humanity, suggesting that it would be just a fine alternative compared to the glamorous and illusory thought forms which many accept purely on the basis of belief. And then they take the illusion down into the emotional plane and give everything they have emotionally to its perpetuation and physically as well. In a way, it all starts with wrong thought. Illusory thought, thought that is not challenged. So you can understand that the philosophers and those who seek to teach people logic and the possible errors of their thinking are doing a good service, because then people will not accept that which is put upon them as requiring belief and adherence, but they will see the flaw. So, before the end of the 21st century AD, I think many of us will be back by that time or before that time, continuing the task of bringing this great teaching in the best possible way before humanity, so that humanity will begin thinking in occult terms. Saturn will help that, Uranus will help that. You know, the planets stimulated now, namely Saturn and Uranus, will help occultism win the day. This is a prophecy from HBB, a sense of a requirement. And this means the Piscean energy will have faded out. The sixth ray energy will be almost abstracted. We will be fought tooth and nail in this by the residual reactionary forces. But okay, that's always the way it is, at a change of age and a change of rays. There are these cross currents, you know, when there is no interference, the ray flows along, the zodiacal energy flows along, but when there are cross currents between rays which are basically inharmonious, I'm remembering DK telling us that most every ray would find its accommodation during the seventh ray age, but only the sixth ray, I think in its monadic nature, would not. The sixth ray would not find an easy adjustment when confronted with the Saturnian restraints of the seventh ray and the need in a Uranian manner to work from within one's own core rather than in response to a focus in which one believes. So I don't think we'll find that we have no sixth-ray types. I think sixth-ray personalities will exist. They are in the majority right now, along with the third ray. Maybe that will all fade out. And the fourth ray is coming in from its monadic nature. But monads on the sixth ray will find a difficult time. Let's see if I can find that. I thought it was interesting, you know. It may not... Sixth ray monads. Yeah, here it is. The minor rays of harmony and science respond quickly to this seventh influence. By that statement, I mean that their monads are easily influenced in this direction. So we will have sixth ray monads present. They won't be working through sixth ray souls. Sixth ray souls will be abstracted. Sixth-ray personalities may be present. The monads of the sixth-ray of devotion find conformity more difficult until nearing the point of synthesis. The monads of the first and second rays find in this ray a field of expression. First-ray monads have a direct link with this ray and seek to wield the law through power, while second-ray monads, being the synthetic type, guide and rule through love. It's a very important thing in Letters on Occult Meditation, page 43, and I think we should bring it in here if we possibly can. Okay, well, occasionally I have that knock at the door, you know, and I have to answer, yes. this is so interesting, isn't it? From LOM, page 43 or so. It shows us that we will have sixth-ray monads with us even during the age when the sixth ray is retracted, because it's not being retracted according to its monadic cycle. Okay, let's say that the sixth ray is not being retracted according to its monadic cycle, but according to its soul cycle. Of course, it is largely at this point not monads which influence very much the trend of civilization and culture. It is more of the souls. I don't know what effect this will have upon personalities. The personality ray is conditioned by the sun sign. We'll still have all the signs of the zodiac. We'll have the ruling planets. So we will have all the rays, but the preponderance of sixth ray soul units, such as we have now, and the irrational behavior which results from it, should subside. The seventh ray, we have to remember, gives us an equal blend of the first, second, and third rays. And a lot of mental accomplishment can occur on this seventh ray, especially in relation to bringing spirit and matter together and working in the realm of matter. So let's see where we are here. Yes, winning the day before the end of the 21st century. And it would be nice to know what is this Western cycle of Europe and how she calculates that. Maybe I can talk to my friend Philip Lindsay, who does great work on cycles, and see if he understands what that may mean. I do so feel that the revelation of esoteric astrology to the public is so much a group matter. I've been privileged to work with many fine esoteric astrologers. You know, I couldn't list them all, but, you know, Eleanor Dramcini and Lawson Bracewell and Philip Lindsay and Stephen Pugh and Peter Gubaska and Nicholas Nilen and Malvin Artley and my own daughter, Heidi. And there's Patrick, I'm forgetting his last name at the moment, and Jeremy Kontik, he's knowing a great deal about it as well. I hate to start listing names because through mental blocks I forget people who are important in this, Kathy Newbern and Jan Dietrich and David Walters, wow, our Vulcan man, you know. It's a group process, really. And my wife, Tuya, has contributed so much on mythological astrology and bringing together the Hindu, Egyptian, and Buddhist systems. Amazing. No one person is going to do all this. And there out there are people who are writing books on the Tibetan esoteric astrology. I don't even know these people. It's a group work. I just have this horrible feeling. Please forgive me, friends, if I fail to mention someone who has been contributing astrologically. Leone Hodson, of course. There's so many. And Eva Smith, and I just have to, someone just went out of my mind and was important. Well, that's it. You know, the over-inclusiveness or inclusiveness of the second ray, I have that, you know, and I want to include everyone, you know, and to honor them and to acknowledge them for the work that they do. Did I mention Philip Lindsay? I sure hope so. We work in the University of the Seven Rays, this is the year 2013, in an astrological mode, having rayology and astrology working together, and try to help people understand really who they are. It seems very important for the science of intelligent and artistic living, or the art of living. Esoteric astrology seems indispensable. It is a group revelation. And I know one-fourth of the group in the world that is revealing these things. And more will come. And I should include Bruce Lyon too. He's written important books on astrology and cosmology. Well, you know, the personalities are not important. It's the conduits. They're simply conduits through which the inner understanding reaches humanity. And that's why I undertook the work in this book, you know. I've been writing astrology books a long time. I'm not sure if they ever see the light of day, but they do get online. And what seemed important to me is to attend word for word, phrase by phrase, sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph to everything the Tibetan said along this line. And of course, he said things in Cosmic Fire and Esoteric Astrology and other books as well along this line. So not let any stone go unturned. At least be exposed to all that has been said and to give it a thoughtful approach, thoughtful consideration. And this is all in the effort as well to prepare. So yes, I wanted to mention Ayla Lorcanen, with whom I and William Meter. You know, of course, it, you know, it extends, it ramifies. People with whom I have taught the USR PhD class and who are deeply involved in esoteric astrology in their own way. We have to assimilate this material. It is a treasure. And why would the Tibetan want to give out more? Why would he feel justified in giving out more unless we had done a good job of assimilating what he's already given out, using it as much as possible? That's what we want to do, to make ourselves worthy of the installment which is forthcoming, and who knows what wonders of knowledge may lie in this next installment which the Tibetan can give. I think it'll be really quite extraordinary. I've got to mention Kurt Abraham too, as well. People come to me, you know, they fall in, and the marvelous work that he's done astrologically and rheologically. Well, moving on. I don't want to get sentimental here. I appreciate the work that all this group has done. We haven't always gotten along with true and complete harmony. There have been fights in the outer world, but in unity of purpose, we are working on the same revelation of the great science of relations. So one has to be appreciative for being able to work with such thinkers. Of course, I can't leave out Dwayne Carpenter and Timothy Spring, great thinkers in this field, somewhat in astrology, but certainly in occultism. I don't really want to leave anybody out. And but the capacity of the brain sometimes does not is not sufficient. And of course, I have to think about my friend Dr. Finn Anderson, who just died. I've got to include Gisla Hendon here and his work in Norway on the Labors of Hercules. But Dr. Anderson, he just died last June 10th. Died in the sign of his moon 1 year ago this year, so 2012, and what a passionate man about astrology. Running a cancer, alternative cancer clinic, helping many, many people, and always using astrology to help to discover the source of their illness and possible duration of their illness, possible cures, a passionate astrologer. And many other things. A great and colorful character. I want to honor him for all the work he has done. And you know, and it was because of his love of astrology that so many of us astrologers, Nicholas and Gisla and myself and William, we were able to bring our esoteric astrology right into the midst of his work in the cancer clinic, and to teach courses for 16 years or more before he died and the clinic had to be sold and so forth. So it's been quite a trip. Oh, and I can't forget Holger Staunsberg. I couldn't leave him out. Marvelous Danish astrologer. Really into the rays and astrology, and a great friend. Well, you know, my apologies to any friends or acquaintances that I should know who is deeply into astrology and whom I have somehow not mentioned. But my point is, it's a group presentation of astrology in the new form. And all are needed. And I've been honored to be able to meet many of these people in my world travels and now over the internet. It was Patrick Mulcahy, that's who it was. I forgot the last name. And then so many people are on the Cosmos Cycles now, and Nicholas is supervising that. We all bring our little piece to the puzzle. And we hope that the picture we're able to present to humanity of the new possibilities of astrology, helping to think the Tibetans' esoteric astrology into the public mind, will be of value to everyone. And of course, my many colleagues in the Moria Federation and University of the Seven Rays over the years, those who are particularly interested in the astrological angle of things. There are many, and it continues to ramify. One of the most powerful among the seven creating angels of the third order, being Saturn, the presiding genius of the planet and the God of the Hebrews, namely Jehovah, to whom is dedicated a seventh day or Sabbath, Saturday or Saturn's day. Well, you know, how can you escape? Can one escape associating the seventh ray with Saturn? I've always felt it simply must be. Look at the seventh sign, Libra, ruled in two powerful ways by Saturn. And what do we learn something about that word order? You know, when we're presented this and that of this and that order, does it mean, does the word order in this context, relate to the monadic ray? Because Saturn is the monadic ray 3, of the monadic ray 3, expresses 3-3 as the monadic ray. Maybe the soul 2, but it looks like he is powerful indeed and very old. And these are the seven creating angels of a sacred kind, and these we call planetary logoi. And he is definitely connected with the Jewish group, the God of the Hebrews. He is Jehovah, but Vulcan is involved in that too. And he is a material, in a way a material being, but of course material in a very high sense, because he rules, in a sense, the entire cosmic physical plane, or as a correspondence to the permanent atom of the permanent atom of the solar logos involved with the cosmic physical plane. So when we sometimes look at orders, you know, the second order, Betelgeuse, Betelgeuse, or Betelgeuse, second order is the monadic ray the second. Our sun is of the fourth order. Well, it relates to the Buddhic plane, to the color yellow and so forth, but do we have a second ray, a fourth ray monad, and perhaps eventually a second ray monad, at which point we would change orders? I mean, maybe the word order, order, relates to one of the two monadic rays. Is there anything of the fifth order? We know Betelgeuse now, for instance, maybe some have said that Sirius is of the fifth order. Fifth order? Let's see. The vibration of the fifth order is recognized by him. Who is this one who recognizes? excuse me. A series of vibrations will become more potent as our Logos nears that period which is occultly called the divine maturity. I suppose that relates to the third cosmic initiation, which emanate from that constellation of the heavens which embodies his polar opposite. This is a deep mystery, and that is, the polar opposite in this case is Sirius, just as Venus is the polar opposite of our Earth. It will be apparent, therefore, how little can be predicated anent the future of the solar system until the vibrations of the sixth and seventh order become more powerful. I suppose this is Buddhi and Atma, and their effects can consequently be studied more easily. It is not possible here to do more than indicate the seven types of vibration to which our solar logos functioning in a material body will in due course of time consciously and fully respond. He responds to the vibration of the first, second, third, and fourth order quite fully at this time, but as yet, though responding, cannot fully and consciously utilize these types of energy. The vibration of the fifth order is recognized by him, particularly in three of his centers, but not yet fully under his control. The other two are sensed. Well, this is amazing, but of course it's not what I'm looking for. So the order of vibrations has to do with planes, I think. The order of vibrations with planes. And let's see, we've got one more. Vibrations of the fifth order monastic. Well, no, there's no discussion of being of the fifth order. Fourth order, we have many. Our logos, the logos of the fourth order. System of the fourth order. Solar system of the fourth order. Human units, ethers of the fourth order, alchemists of the fourth order, and so forth. Some devas of the fourth order are much lower order, but our solar logos of the fourth order, system of the fourth order, having its four centers upon the fourth cosmic plane. Mm-hmm. I understand. Fourth cosmic plane. That's interesting, because those are super cosmic. Yeah, those are centers which are really Buddhic centers. However, I still insist we have to look higher. At least it should not be ruled out. The cohorts of the fourth order. Well, let's quickly look for the second order. And I think there's not many. Vegetable kingdom. Devas of the second order. Second order and Betelgeuse, I'm hoping, from the occult standpoint, is a system of the system. Is it a solar system? Or does Betelgeuse point to Orion as a stellar system? There's consequently a relation between these two numbers, both in the system and the cosmos, 2 and 4. This influence reaches our system via the sign Sagittarius. And I think Sagittarius has much to do with the fourth and sixth ray and with the fifth. But the Sagittarius connection, well, there's just so much to discuss here. I'm going to get into this. I feel myself licking my chops in a way here, wanting to get into this at the end of a treatise on cosmic fire. It is the maybe my favorite part of the book, and the part that before which I was forced to stop by other requirements and perhaps fatigue. But we will see, we will see. It whets my appetite at this point. The sign of the Messiah's coming was the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn in the sign Pisces. Well, I did discuss this earlier. The law and the great love. We can say, you know, it can be looked at as will and love, or law and love. And, you know, Christ was always saying that Christ comes to fulfill the law. And law is so important in Judea, you know, with its first-race soul. Saturn, in relation to the first-race soul of Judea, it's understandable. And its third-ray personality, it has both the rays. I guess I should put that down. That Saturn has both the rays given for the Jews, the first ray soul, and the third ray personality, but not in that order, you see, because Saturn very likely has the personality on the first ray. Sometimes I've wondered, does it have the soul on the first ray? But then it would be the same as Vulcan, and that would not be allowed. So there is no other sacred planet with a soul on the third ray. We have to have Saturn. Whoop. And I'll put that down, that since there is no other sacred planet with a soul on the third ray, it must be Saturn. It's not, you know, any of the sacred planets, they all fill in the other rays. Saturn is the third ray. So it is a really strong repository. If the Sun is 2-2, in some of its vehicles, Saturn is a 3-3. And so you can understand why they, in a way, represent opposites of materiality and understanding. Okay. So I discussed this fulfillment of the law and the great, you know, Jupiter is life more abundant. And that's what the Christ came to give, life more abundant, and also to fulfill the law. But when there was a conjunction of these two, and presumably for a conjunction, we're just not dealing with longitude, we're dealing with declination as well. So we're dealing with the horizontal and the vertical factor, which would make them visually appear to be together and produce a great light. And was there another planet as well? I told you about the conjunction of Jupiter, Venus, and the Moon in Pisces, which a number of us experienced maybe 14, 15 years ago. You could really feel the Christ energy. Saturn was called the Dragon of Life, and thus the possibility of Saturn being a lesser dragon exists. And we talked about a possible connection between Draco and Saturn and Neptune in relation to certain beings who find their home on Neptune and are connected. Oh, was that the one that I did? I think so. The lesser dragon, a constellation, the lesser dragon, and Neptune. Saturn with its rulership, says HPB, hopefully for good reason, of the devotional faculties. You know, sometimes when facing one's dweller on the threshold, one is facing Saturn. And it is like facing a dragon. with all the devouring heads, just like the crocodile swallows the heart, for reincarnation, once again into matter, swallowed by matter, not free, Saturn imprisonment, the heads imprisoning heads, we face our limitations, the factors that limit our life. So when we face this dragon, we face the factors which limit our life, the vices, the imprisoners. Saturn is very much the dweller on the threshold. It has a very strong connection with the Libra and the seventh house, and it's like the being consciousness facing its vehicle or what it has created, the conditions it has created. It faces its conditioning. We might say that the dweller on the threshold is our conditioning under Saturn. And we have to, archetypalization. I wonder if I have this. I would like to have that. Would you mind? I will just go here as I have been going. And this is the word archetypalize. We have to, but archetypalize what? Archetypalize our conditioning. And do this through Uranus. We have a conditioning based on desire and based upon selfish mind. And we have to find a way to change the pattern. And that's what archetypalizing our conditioning really means, to change the pattern. And so to archetypalize is to change the pattern. So when we look out at Saturn, there it is. There's our condition staring us in the face, with all the limitations, and we are standing at the point of being in the exalted sun at the Aries point. We know we are pure being, but can we express through the conditions we have created? So we have to change those conditions via Uranus so that they are in such a pattern that they resonate with that standing wave we call, that logoically sustained standing wave we call purpose. And then there will be a direct transmission of being and purpose into the conditions. And they will no longer be dwelling on the threshold of liberation, because we can pass through them, use them, using the right conditions, and then be liberated. No longer will we be like that old TV program, you know, caught in the jaws of the vice. I'm thinking back, you know, in those dragnet days, long time ago. Saturn, Shiva, and Jehovah are one. Well, in what way one? They all share something. They all share austerity. You know, Saturn, present home of a super principle, the first ray, first round, first ray. Oh, I don't have to ever write the word fry. Okay. Well, we're getting there. So, inasmuch as they wield this first ray of will and power, we can certainly see the connection between Saturn and Jehovah. Generally, Shiva seems to be a greater deity. Shiva, a greater deity. More liberated, but extremely disciplined and world and detached from allurement. So in the first ray quality of the energy expressed, they are united. Saturn is the synthesizing scheme for the four planets which embody Manus, Pure, and Simple, and is the major resolution for the minor four. And eventually for all the seven. Well, around Saturn, you know, when you look at the, that's it, that's the one. So we just have to make it smaller. There is Saturn for certain planets that embody Manus, Pure, and Simple, and eventually for all the seven. Which seven? Now, you know, a hint is being given here. Manus, Pure, and Simple. Well, can we say, are these the non-sacred planets? Are the non-sacred planets the ones which embody Manus, Pure, and Simple? Because other planets may have Manus, but also the development of higher faculties, Pure and Simple. Now, words which just stood out for me is the word major resolution. 68, 669. That means, what this means is there will be resolutions which are not major. So there will be resolutions which are not major. Preliminary resolutions and the major resolution may well be the final resolution. You know how I've talked about does Venus actually go into Saturn because it's in the Saturnian circle? But then maybe Saturn is not for it the major resolution. Maybe Neptune is the major resolution, and somehow Venus, having resolved into Saturn, can extricate itself again and its principles be drawn off into Venus. This operates in some manner. You know, do we say Earth, Pluto, Mars, and X all go into Saturn? The non-sacred planets in which the love energy is not yet fully developed because the fifth initiation or fifth cosmic initiation, they're all cosmic initiations, but maybe fifth lesser, has not been taken, and is the major resolution for the four minor and eventually for all the seven. But what I want to say is, eventually for all of the seven, but not for the nine. In other words, we're not going to have, at this time, Uranus or Neptune being absorbed into Saturn. Saturn undertakes the first resolutions. So Jupiter and Vulcan do not embody Manus, Pure, and Simple. I wonder, does Mercury? I mean, Mercury is a very advanced planet. So there are some advanced planets which do not embody Manus, Pure, and Simple. But they will also be absorbed. In other words, I do believe Saturn, as the father of Jupiter, will absorb Jupiter. I believe it will absorb Vulcan. Vulcan is part of this list. Pluto is not, but one can consider Pluto, I think, as quite a monastic planet. It even has that internal nature. But this is the Vulcan scheme. So there are six here, and even Pluto for seven. And, you know, maybe this is a greater being, in a sense, an esoteric and larger Saturn, and it even absorbs Saturn itself. So it's and is the major resolution for the minor four. The question is it the major and eventually for all the seven, the major resolution for the seven. So for which planets is Saturn the major resolution? Well, there's some problems coming up, but Earth, Mars, Pluto, although maybe that wasn't mentioned yet. Earth, Mars, Pluto's not mentioned, and the Sun veiling Ray 2 planet, the Moon veiling Ray 4 planet. Okay. So 1, 2, 3, 4, excluding Pluto. But then also, see, Venus is not Manus pure and simple, and Mercury is not Manus pure and simple. Also, Jupiter and Vulcan. But Mercury has a destiny in Uranus. And if Saturn is absorbed into Uranus, we can say that Mercury is as well. And Venus has a destiny in Neptune. Same idea. But one thinks that somehow Mercury and Venus must find their own way into their, and I want to comp their major synthesizer. In other words, what I'm saying is that for Mercury and Venus, Saturn is not the major synthesizer. Now, have I left any planets out? See, so what would be the seven? We can have seven here, if we count the veiled planets and Pluto. So we would have Earth, Mars, Pluto, veiled second ray, veiled fourth ray, Jupiter and Vulcan. That makes seven. But I think the Tibetan is trying to include Mercury and Venus in a sense. Certainly Mercury and Venus surround Saturn, but their major resolution is not found in Saturn. Their major resolution is found in the two other planets. So we have a sevenness, and if we assume that somehow Mercury breaks with this circle of Saturn, and Venus breaks with the circle of Saturn, and is somehow absorbed into Uranus directly and Venus into Neptune directly, we will still have seven. So I suppose the big question is whether Saturn absorbs Mercury and Venus first, and then through its synthesis into Uranus and Uranus into Neptune, whether that's the way Mercury and Venus reach their major resolution. But I think maybe not, because then it would be the same for all the planets, and DK singles out the idea that Mercury is resolved into Uranus and Venus into Neptune. So here we have actually, 12 planets altogether. We have a seven, and then we have a nine, and let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, eight, 9, 10, 11, 12. And I think, DK is maybe not dealing with the absorption of 12 planets, but I think it is a big question. toward the end of things whether there's a direct absorption of Mercury into Uranus. Of course, eventually maybe Neptune will get it all. And a direct absorption of Venus into Neptune without having to go through Saturn absorption and Uranus's absorption of Saturn and then Saturn into Neptune. Now, of course, that's still hypothetical. The one resolver is the Sun, but it may be, after all, that Uranus is the final resolver, but maybe not in this solar system, as I have been trying to say. Okay, well, I've gone on a little longer than I should. What else is new? Let's just say that this is the end of Esoteric Astrology, Adventure number 157C, page 668. Deal. And beginning of Esoteric Astrology, Adventure number 157D, I think I'll go on and try to do that, 668.